Well, good day, everyone. Today, we are focusing in on natural solutions for migraine relief. Yes, that's true. And if anyone has ever suffered from migraines, you know what a truly royal pain they can be. So I'm really excited today. We've got our expert, Maria Jensen, who is a biodynamic craniosacral therapist, who's also a health coach specializing in chronic migraine relief and the alleviation of brain fog, indigestion, and histamine intolerance through plant-based solutions, which is perfect. It's what we're all about. Maria is extremely passionate. She's a proponent of folk medicine, community medicine, and self-care as healthcare. And she coaches people internationally from her home in Portland, Oregon, where she lives with her husband and two beautiful young boys. I'm really excited to have Maria with us today, and she's going to tell us exactly what we can do to support ourselves or our loved ones who may suffer from migraines. So welcome, Maria.
Thank you, Shauna, for having me. This is so in alignment with my passion for plant-based solutions. So thank you for hosting this whole series.
Oh, absolutely. I'm so glad that you were able to join us, because as we were chatting a little bit before we got on the line, I'd had your website saved in my Google taskbar for quite some time. And it was time to bring this message to the greater world. You know, I mentioned that some of my family, migraines were just a buzzword around my house growing up, right? Like, my Nana suffered from them. I used to get them as a kid, although I've kind of grown out of them. My cousin used to miss school all the time from migraines. And, there was really little that we knew what to do. My Nana would just lie in a dark room with a cool cloth on her head, right? And we would just leave her be until it passed. How did you get into this particular coaching?
Yeah. Well, thanks for bringing up your family, because, it really is, I think it's something that as a culture, we just sort of think of it as genetic, or we know that a lot of people have them, but we don't realize how debilitating they are. And they're like the sixth most debilitating condition. Mm-hmm. They're extremely debilitating, yet people are expected to still function with them. And when I got migraines, well, at least when they became extremely chronic, I had a newborn baby. And so, this is some women's initiation into getting migraines. It goes along with motherhood. So I'm super passionate about helping mothers with migraine, especially. But so for me, I did actually have migraine starting in my late 20s is sort of when they started to crop up. I can actually trace my headaches appearing like around age 12 or so with the introduction of like MSG and having a sensitivity to foods high in glutamate. So now that I look back and see the pattern, I see that, it wasn't manifesting as migraine at that point, but that I've had a sensitivity to glutamate that eventually did manifest into extremely debilitating migraines. So I would get them, when I was about 29 or so, I'd get them maybe once a year. And then by the time I was 31, which is around when I met my husband, I was getting them. I had like a dose of Flagyl, a dose of antibiotics that year, which was just very casually administered to me and with no mention of, how to rehabilitate the gut flora or anything. And it's really from that point on, there was also a lot of stress in my life at that time, that the migraines started to get more frequent until they were about once a month leading up to my pregnancy. But then after I had a C-section with my first pregnancy, along with, the epidural, the anesthesia, the antibiotics, not to mention the hardcore pain meds, the opiates, it was just like a perfect storm. So I was already vulnerable before, and then it just mixed with the sleep deprivation and everything, being a mom from nursing all night. And so it took me a good I was pretty much researching and experimenting constantly for a good 2.5 years. And I don't know, well, I do know why I didn't ever take any pain meds for the migraine, but because my dad and mom, that I was raised on an intentional community with parents who were very back to the land and into natural solutions and taking responsibility for your health. And like, we didn't have Tylenol in our house, or if we had it, no one used it. We just were not the type of family that reached for pills. And so for me, it didn't appear to be a solution. It just wasn't even really on my radar. Mm-hmm. I just suffered through the migraines and knew that there would be a solution out there eventually. But for me, meds were not a solution. And when I say this, I'm not trying to judge anyone who has reached that point, because I'm very stubborn, and I'm glad I was as stubborn as for as long as I was in not taking meds, but I'm sure at a certain point I would have caved into meds because in the absence of any other solution, you know, people have to function in their lives, and especially as a parent, you know, you have to function. So I am very grateful that I had that example from my parents, and that I was as stubborn as I was. But yeah, no judgment for people who do end up popping pills. But anyway, so I did not do that. I basically just suffered through the migraines while I was experimenting and researching. And then at a certain point, after not getting any help from doctors and actually getting my symptoms exacerbated, I actually saw a friend who was a naturopath who suggested a Chinese remedy that had cinnamon as the first ingredient. And I was getting worse. I was getting worse headaches. And I'm actually super grateful that she prescribed that to me, because I looked and I was like, okay, first ingredient is cinnamon. What the hell is going on with this Chinese remedy? And, you know, cinnamon increases circulation. And, I mean, it's a potent antiviral. It's an amazing medicine. But it's also very high in histamine. So this was sort of the clue that I needed to find out and to realize that there was that the inflammation in my body was a form of histamine overload. And I've since sort of refined my view of, you know, there's a lot of different molecules and substances that lead to histamine and that are at play besides, or that lead to inflammation besides histamine. But at that point, when I discovered sort of a framework for understanding what was going on, which is histamine intolerance and histamine overload, it came from that little bottle of Chinese remedies. And I just was Googling it and found out that cinnamon was high in histamine, and that kind of led me down a path where I pieced together some sense of what was going on and started to reduce the histamine-rich foods in my diet and started a video blog. And my video blog was called Health Reflections Journal. The videos are still up. I don't add to it much anymore, but so I, you know, basically was announcing to the world that I was going to cure myself and take responsibility for my own health and find a solution. And, you know, I realized it was possible I might not succeed, and that might be kind of embarrassing because more and more people kept following my videos. Right. And I went through a whole parasite cleanse. And, you know, I mean, I was sharing very vulnerable personal information online, but eventually I did get a solution. And I think the journaling process was very helpful in that, you know, the public journaling, like just processing what's going on. And so when I did hit upon a solution, one of my followers reached out to me and asked me if I would coach her. So she kind of initiated me into being a coach. So in the true tradition of folk medicine, just kind of like word of mouth, non-experts sharing information with other non-experts. And, you know, there is a whole folk medicine revolution happening. Some of it is conscious and some of it is unconscious, in the sense that there's a lot of people who are sick sharing with each other what works for themselves and what research they've come across, and they're not necessarily conscious that they're not calling it folk medicine or a folk medicine revolution, but it's happening by way of the fact that a lot of people just simply aren't finding solutions with their doctors and with the trained experts. So, you know, folk medicine has always happened, but now that we have the internet, there's a lot of different forums and spaces where people can share what they're learning. Mm. And so there was a certain point in my healing journey where I realized this is folk medicine, and that's what excites me. Simple solutions that are open source.
I love that you brought that up. I really love that you brought that up, because it's, in a sense, what this whole interview series is about, right? Like, yes, I'm gathering experts, but they're not some of your typical experts that you might expect, like, you know, the traditional herbalist, yourself, like the migraine coaching. I just got off the phone with two, you know, brilliant young gentlemen who have made it their life's work to really dive into the research around diabetes. You know, it's like, so it really is this global information sharing. And I love that you brought it back to folk medicine. That's perfect. That's awesome.
And folk medicine kind of goes back to community-based medicine too, which is just like people caring about each other enough to where, like, on some of these online forums, these are people that have never met each other, and yet they're extending the care and compassion to take the time to explain what they did and share the research, and it's just super exciting. I mean, it's, because that's really where, when people heal is when they feel cared for and supported, and it's a form of nourishment. I see it as a form of nourishment.
That's so true.
People don't always get from seeing their doctor. You know, if you go to see a doctor and it's just a short little time span, people don't get that sense of nourishment and support that is sort of the emotional basis for part of the healing journey too.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And, you know, you brought up earlier the, you know, some of the medications that are out there for migraines. And correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is they're actually not very effective for a lot of people. Is that true?
Yeah, well, my understanding, and, you know, I've not really taken a deep dive into the pharmaceuticals. I mean, whenever I get a client who is on certain pharmaceuticals, it's always like, oh, great, what did they put this person on, you know, like, and there's so many of them. I have a pharmacology book that I got at a thrift store that I look into, you know, from time to time when someone has a new medication they're taking. But for the most part, the people who come to me are usually put on triptan medications, which appear to be the most effective pharmaceuticals for preventing and avoiding migraine, but they were not designed for that. So pretty soon here, they're going to be coming out with some new pharmaceutical drugs that are actually the first pharmaceuticals that were designed specifically for migraine. So there are antidepressants and other pharmaceuticals that work with the serotonin system that have been helpful in, for getting rid of migraine, but they weren't necessarily designed for that. And this new pharmaceutical, I don't know the name of it, but it works through the CGRP, which stands for calcitonin gene-related peptide. So it's a neuropeptide, one of the inflammatory peptides in the brain that when it gets in elevated levels, it causes blood vessel dilation. Mm-hmm. And so the this medication works on the side of the receptor site of the cell where it blunts the receptor site so that that flood of CGRP doesn't cause too much dilation. And I believe the triptans, even though triptans also work with serotonin, they're also working with that CGRP pathway. And so they cause constriction of the blood vessels, which is one reason why they might have side effects like issues with vision because it's constricting the blood vessels leading to the eye. But again, it's suppressive. So from my point of view, I just think that it's a very old paradigm and we, you know, If there's anything that's a side effect, you know, that word side effect is very deceptive. What it's basically saying is this thing is happening on the side and it's not that important. Well, if you're not experiencing it and you're just a company, maybe that's the case. But if you're the person experiencing the side effect, it's not happening on the side. It's another way of saying that this medication is causing a systemic effect with some unwanted effects within the system, you know. So we need to look and think in terms of whole systems, in terms of the body as a whole system. So we know that a solution to migraine or really to anything that has systemic effects which are positive is obviously more preferable. So for me, that's sort of the barometer for any kind of solution. You know, like when I started doing my protocol, all these things, all these health issues that I had kind of just accepted as part of my stuff, like acne and, you know, where they were all manifestations of lymphatic congestion pretty much. But they just disappeared. They just dissolved, you know? So instead of solving problems, sometimes if you just give the body the right nourishment, these problems dissolve. And so it's really not that the agent or the thing that you're taking is doing the healing per se, but that your body needs a certain type of support in order to do the healing work that it already needs, knows how to do. And, you know, the body is the healer, and we also forget sometimes, I think, that, like, even in the midst of sickness and illness, the body is healing, you know, and that health is always present. I mean, if it weren't, we would just completely crumble, you know. So I think there's a tendency with chronic sickness to, first of all, make it very concrete and think of it as a real thing when really all it is a process of the body crying out for more support. And so, you know, we just got to give it the right kind of support, and when we do so, all these other as a side effect or a systemic effect, all these other health conditions also improve simultaneously.
Yeah. I hear about that a lot, right? Where, you know, whether it's dealing with the candida overgrowth or, you know, cutting out, I don't know, a certain food or dealing with inflammation, like all this myriad different complications fall away as well, which is fascinating, right? It's like the body either craves homeostasis. Well, it does crave homeostasis, and yet being out of balance can show up in different ways for a lot of people. And that's kind of what I'm wondering. I'm listening to you talk, and it brought up a question for me. So are migraines triggered by pretty much the same thing in most people? Like you mentioned MSG, you mentioned the glutamate, food sensitivities, gut flora. Is it kind of all the same problem leading to the headache, or is it different for each person?
Well, I mean, I think on some level, it's different for each person. in the sense that, so say there are five people who have all had their migraines triggered from the fact that their gut flora got out of balance from antibiotics. Let's say they all have that in common. Mm-hmm. You know, even the different types of antibiotics could have wiped out different types of bacteria in their gut, meaning that even though that's the same root cause, the foods that they're going to get triggered by and are sensitive to might be very different. Like if their gut bacteria that process salicylates or process oxalates were wiped out because of the one brand of antibiotics they took, they might have very different food sensitivities that trigger migraine than someone who took a different brand of antibiotics. You know, so there's mm-hmm. just, there's infinite diversity and there's infinite variation in terms of root cause if you really want to get specific about it. And of course there's, you know, someone could have been hit in the head. There's also, you know, musculoskeletal influences in terms of just like alignment, deep breathing, the stress patterns. I mean, it's migraine is huge. I mean, if you look at all the symptoms and list of issues that come along with migraine, you know, insomnia, hypothyroidism, gallbladder disease, you know, I mean, on and on and on. So I'm actually writing an article for Cora right now about what the root cause of migraine is. And, you know, where do you start with that constellation of symptoms? What is the thing that's starting it all? My view is that, you know, it's the microbiome. And it's not just the gut microbiome because, yeah, we need to heal the gut and antibiotics affect the gut really negatively. And most people have had a lot of antibiotics and stress affects the gut. And, you know, the microbiome is certainly, it's like another organ of the body, you know. But what's happening, I think, is that we're realizing that the microbiome is not just in the gut. It's in the blood. It's in the brain. The brain has a microbiome. You know, they haven't even sequenced all of it yet. At least 200 different forms of bacteria are in the brain. You know, not to mention viruses, you know, like herpes viruses. And so, and they can communicate with each other. There was some research that just came out like fairly recently. I think it was from Harvard, I get the guy's name, but he's talking about these, biofilm communities of bacteria, basically. They live together, you know, many different types of bacteria living together that they can actually communicate through electrical signaling. It's not all through chemical signaling. And so they can actually even communicate information, you know, via the vagus nerve, but also just through this electrical signaling to different biofilms in different regions of the body. So there's some debate with, you know, among people in migraine and among the experts as to, you know, does migraine really start from blood vessel dilation impinging on the trigeminal nerve, or is it something that actually starts in the brain, or is it something that starts in the gut and then like communicates to the brain? But for me, on a certain level, you know, those technicalities aren't really that interesting because it is one system. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like I see the body as kind of like this like shining fractal faceted jewel, and you can rotate it, you know, and shine light on different facets and different angles, and you're still looking at the same thing, and it's all just one thing though, you know. So the benefit of not being trained formally is that you start to look at facets of this crystal from maybe from a different angle or from a different view than people who have been trained to look at it in a certain way. And so, but that doesn't mean that they're incompatible with each other. You know, if you're seeing migraine causality from the standpoint of the liver or gallbladder or even the kidneys, you know, the kidneys filter the lymph out. You know, there's so many ways that we could look at it and seeing what the root cause is, but ultimately the body is such an intelligent system that no matter where something starts, it's this feedback system that's not linear. Mm-hmm. You know, so and it's all in communication with each other. So long story short, yeah, I think that for most people, antibiotics play a huge role, but really there's a lot of things that affect our microbiome, especially our gut microbiome. And, you know, taking pharmaceuticals, really anything that you put in your mouth every day is going to affect which bacteria grow there. So obviously diet. And there's, you know, some people, maybe their migraines may have come from like an impact, like if they were playing sports, you know, like maybe like concussions if you were a football player, you know, but most of the people mm-hmm. come to me. Even if they have technically had a different diagnostic code for the type of migraine they have, you know, there's migraine with aura and then there's chronic migraine, and these are descriptions of different symptoms and different ways that the migraine manifests. But the cool thing is that I found most people that come to me, even if they have very different types of migraine, respond to the protocol, which yeah. implies to me that most of these different types have a similar root cause. And, you know, it may be that the one person who goes blind in one eye when she gets a migraine, maybe she had whiplash at age 13 and, like, the alignment of her, you know, bones in her skull, in her neck maybe impinge on one nerve a little more than someone else does. But whatever is causing the inflammation beneath that might be very similar to someone who has a migraine that manifests differently, you know?
Yeah.
So that's and what's cool is that, yeah.
No, I was just thinking about the histamine connection, because the two most recent people I can think of that suffer from migraines pretty readily, one, she knows that, you know, chocolate and alcohol, et cetera, will trigger a migraine. And then the other eats a lot of meat, right? Just like as part of her day. And they're both, if I'm not wrong, they're both, all of those are very high histamine foods. And so that brings back to what you said triggered a lot of your symptomology, yeah?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Well, some people are doing the ketogenic diet, which involves, I mean, I think technically ketogenic is really just eating a lot of fat and not eating a lot of carbs. And it doesn't necessarily mean eating a lot of meat, but I think some of the people who end up going on the keto diet do end up eating a lot of meat. So, you know, I never really thought of meat as so much of as a migraine trigger, but it can, it also is susceptible to breakdown by bacteria. So, you know, if you're eating really fresh meat, that's not going to introduce as many bacteria that are hard to process as, say, if you eat some bone broth that's been in the fridge or in one of those little canisters for a while, or if you're eating, you know, leftovers 2 or 3 days later. It really depends how much histamine you have in your body overall. So some people who have chronic migraines just have so much histamine in their body that if they eat like some meat for, you know, that's like 2 or 3 days old, and a lot of it is even that old right when you bought it anyway, so then it's already started to go through that breakdown process, and that can be adding bacteria to your system that you don't have the enzymes to break down per se. So or amino acids really is what it is. So whereas someone else might have a migraine once a month and their histamine bucket isn't that high, and they'll eat something like chocolate or drink a glass of wine and it won't tip them over because the histamine load isn't that high. And that's why it's confusing. That's why histamine overload is confusing, because it's not necessarily the food itself that is the trigger. It's how much that food is adding to your overall load of histamine. And so, you know, if your histamine bucket is empty, like after you have a migraine, most people's histamine bucket is empty again. And or at least lower, and then you eat a food, and then it doesn't cause an issue then, you know, so it's confusing. But there are extremely high in histamine. I mean, like cayenne pepper, and that the irony is that a lot of people use cayenne pepper thinking that it's going to help with migraine. And it's true that when it's snorted through the nose, it can really be good for migraine. Not that I've done that, but from what I've read online, I don't like snorting things through my nose, but from what I've read online, whether it's true, the literature shows that it is useful in that way, but eating it and ingesting it, it's very high histamine. Parmesan cheese, extremely high histamine. So, yeah, some foods are just more intense than others. And histamine is everywhere. I mean, it's not like we're going to be able to have a diet completely free from histamine, and that's a very boring diet, and it's not sustainable long term. So that's why my protocol is awesome, because people – can reduce the high histamine foods initially while they're building their gut health and building that resilience and getting the nutrients that they need for the building blocks for the enzymes that break down histamine. Because it's essentially an enzyme deficiency issue. So histamine is just, it only becomes a problem because there's not enough of the enzyme to break it down. So once you get the building blocks in place, the nutritional building blocks, get your gut health improved, and your enzyme levels improved, then you can start to eat histamine foods again, you know, with some caution. Like, you don't want to just, like, live off of high histamine foods every meal, you know, from then on. But, like, after you've stabilized, which takes different amounts of time for different people. Some people it's as soon as a month, 3 weeks, 3 to 4 weeks. For some people it's amazing how quick it is and how easy it is. If they're already eating a pretty whole foods diet, other people, it may take 2 or 3 months or more, depending on how they were eating going into it. Some people don't even cook their own food, or, you know, it could be a learning curve for them to make their own food. So, but point being, once they stabilize and once their gut, the healthy gut flora has been fed by these prebiotics, which is part of the protocol, and not probiotics, which can really cause a lot of problems for people with migraine. Then once they've stabilized, then they can start to reintegrate the high histamine foods. Again, like, I can eat anything now. I am pretty wary of cayenne still, because I found that's one of my biggest triggers. But besides that, and, like, I mean, I can even eat some Parmesan, you know. I've just kind of gone out of the practice of it, but
yeah.
I eat yogurt, I eat chocolate, I drink wine. You know, I can live like a normal person again.
Your body's
not like a low histamine diet is permanent.
Right. It's fascinating. My naturopath actually gave me a supplement to break down histamine in my body, just suspecting that there may be too much histamine going on. But you're talking about being able to naturally start producing higher amounts of that enzyme. How do you go about that?
Yeah, well, so she did she give you something with a pancreas in it? Is it diamine oxidase?
It is.
That's basically supplementing DAO, and diamine oxidase is just one of the enzymes that breaks down histamine. So there are a few other ones that do as well. But yeah, a lot of people with histamine intolerance rely on that, but that doesn't solve any problem because you're not increasing your body's ability to do that. But it can give people relief for sure, but it's very expensive, you know, and then the sourcing of stuff coming from animals is always, you know, questionable, like, just knowing where how healthy was that animal, you know?
Exactly.
So I think I maybe only tried that once in my journey of doing that. But ultimately, you know, enzymes are made out of B vitamins, and our gut flora normally produce B vitamins for us. So that's part of the catch-22 of just, you know, how to get well when your gut flora is compromised, because it's not, you know, one reason you get sick when your gut flora are wiped out by antibiotics is because our gut flora produce B vitamins for us. And so, like, Dr. Stasha Gominak, G-O-M-I-N-A-K, she's an awesome neurologist working, helping people who have migraines, and also noticing that people who have migraines have really poor sleep, really disrupted sleep, as well as digestive problems. She seems to think that the gut flora are the primary source of B vitamins for our body. A lot of us think of food as being our source of nutrition, but I'm starting to view food as being a secondary source of B vitamins, and my gut flora the primary source. So the question is, how do you rehabilitate the healthy bacteria so that you're getting the B vitamins, which are the building blocks for the enzyme? Because your body knows how to make the enzyme. It just needs all the building blocks, right? So there's minerals, you know, and I mean, B vitamins are the main ones. But once you start eating better, and you know, B vitamins are not part of my protocol. I've learned a lot of stuff since the protocol, so I'm actually working on that ebook right now about where I'll be including information about supplements, but that's not as plant-based. But what Dr. Gominak is doing is having people rehabilitate their gut flora through the use of vitamin D and B vitamins together. So the D is anti-inflammatory, and it also helps people sleep. And then by increasing a steady, constant infusion of B vitamins, you're basically creating the environment that the gut flora prefer and that they usually would have made to rehabilitate them. So they prefer the environment they create, right? So if you got wiped out by antibiotics and there aren't many of the healthy bacteria, and then they're not going to be surrounded in this, she calls it a B vitamin soup. They're not going to be surrounded in that soup that they prefer to grow, so they can't grow, you know? But if you provide that for them, then they can. The hard part about that is that there are folic acid and folate are B vitamins that are, they have a molecular structure very closely related to glutamates. So glutamate is another excitatory neurotransmitter, and histamine and glutamate work together and can cause a lot of edema and swelling in the brain. My current theory right now is that it's an inability to properly break down and process amino acids. So histamine is an amino acid, and then glutamine and glutamate are also amino acids, and so is nitrogen and nitrate. And so when we don't have the proper enzymes to break those down, then they build up in our system, and nitrate, when it's converted to ammonia, can lead to excess ammonia in the body. And the combination of histamine and ammonia and glutamate is just a recipe for disaster. It's a, you know, leads to swelling and basically what they call encephalopathy, which is a very generalized term for brain swelling. But so it's not just histamine. You know, it's glutamate and nitrates as well. But there are bacteria in our guts that normally break those down for us, and in the absence of those, they accumulate. So,
yeah.
So the prebiotics in my protocol help to feed the friendly bacteria that are already there, rather than trying to introduce new healthy bacteria, because some of the bacteria in the probiotics are histamine-producing bacteria as well. So there's a problem with supplements. The probiotics having the histamine-promoting bacteria, and then the B vitamins having the folate or folic acid in them. So, you know, when people take both either of those as supplements when they have migraines, they can be contributing to the problem, but it's only because there's those a few culprit characters in there, right?
Sure.
So we get a B vitamin blend without folate or folic acid, or we get a probiotic blend that's only histamine neutral or histamine degrading probiotics, then that would be supportive.
Hmm.
But again, like, all of this is just new information, and I think that the supplements can help stabilize. But ultimately, when I discovered the way out of migraine hell, it was purely through plants and not any supplements at all.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, you're making me think about this in a whole new way. I had some questions, like, already in my mind coming into the interview. I was like, oh, yeah, I wonder about this. I wonder about that. Because, you know, I hear a lot of that butterbur as far as, like, that can be a really effective supplement to take for migraines, but like I'm seeing it in a whole new way, and it's so true. It's like it's a very holistic approach. You don't know what someone's personal issues going in and triggering are, but there's a lot of balancing that needs to happen. That said, did you try butterbur in your journey?
Did I try butterbur?
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because my journey has not really taken me towards herbs at all, which is surprising to me. I have immense respect for, you know, all the plants that Mother Nature provides for us, but my path kept bringing me back to the really humble roots like carrots, potatoes, and radishes. So this is not a good solution for anyone who is ketogenic or is phobic of starch or carbs. I mean, these plants are just so humble and right under our noses. And I actually started juicing carrots because I had read about the Gerson protocol and I liked the high magnesium and potassium in them.
Mm-hmm.
And then I added in some potato to that because I had read that that was good for healing the stomach. And someone had told me about resistant starch a while back, but I just hadn't looked into it. But I noticed when I juiced the potato that there was this starch at the bottom. And I was like, oh, that must be resistant starch. So I looked into it. But my protocol contains some mineral supplementation, especially salt.
Yeah.
Super important because salt has chloride in it, which actually helps the receptor sites of the cells be sensitive to diamine oxidase. So part of the issue with diamine oxidase deficiency might not just be that there's low DAO, but that the receptor sites on the cells are not sensitive to it or sensitized to it. So anyway, there is a mineral component to my protocol, but it's mostly based on these really humble roots, and that's why I think it really is, it's like folk medicine, because you could just tell someone through word of mouth, you know, go eat this many carrots and, you know, juice these potatoes and then eat these radishes, and, you know, it's low tech. It's not proprietary. It could be very easily relayed through word of mouth. But as far as butterbur and the herbs go, I think I tried feverfew, but not butterbur.
Yeah.
But what the research I've done into it has shown, I think it works on the calcium channel. So when the mineral balance is off on a cellular level, the channels are open to calcium too much and they flood in. So so butterbur and feverfew work by, you know, preventing that influx of calcium. But you know, and they're bitter too, which is great for the liver. Like I've taken some aloe vera and some neem leaf powder for bitters for the liver.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, a lot of people, maybe they take it in capsule form, but like the feverfew I took was in as a tea. And you know, just drinking bitter tea all day, I don't know, it's just, it tastes bitter. It doesn't taste good, you know.
Yeah.
I like steak carrot juice better personally.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's funny how the herbs just haven't really caught my attention that much, with the exception of one Amazonian herb that I'm super excited about. And I wrote a blog post on it. It's called Sangre de Grotto, or Sangre de Drago, which is dragon's blood. And I think the Latin name is Croton lechleri, and so it has properties that strengthen the blood capillaries, and it's antiviral and antibacterial. So it's been used for Crohn's and all IBS and all kinds of digestive ailments. And it's one of like the main herbs in the Amazonian medicine lexicon. It's like a sap. It's this red sap that looks kind of like blood. And it also has these proanthocyanidins in it that are, you know, similar to like grape leaves and grape pomace have that really dark purple pigment that seems to be great for capillaries. And then it also seems to work on the CGRP pathway. So that's the main reason I was interested in it, because I thought it might be like a natural solution or alternative to these new CGRP drugs that are coming out. But from the few tests that my clients have done, I don't think that it doesn't work to abort a migraine. I had one lady say it worked once. But I think that it could work longer term if people took, you know, like 5 drops 3 times a day over the course of like 2 months to heal the gut, the underlying issue.
Right.
But it might not just work as a few drops by itself to abort a migraine. There are other things that work for that I've found that are super exciting, that I will be including in my new ebook as soon as I can get around to writing it up.
Yeah, it's something with two little boys running around. It gets a little challenging, right?
yeah, to say the least.
Well, this has been amazing, Mari. You are truly a wealth of knowledge, and I'm so grateful for you for sharing with us today. And I just wanted to let everyone know that you've generously offered everyone a free gift, which is a ebook. Am I correct?
Yeah, this is the ebook that you get for free if you sign up and subscribe to my blog as well. But it's just 5 key leverage points for getting out of migraine hell. And it just, you know, some of it is lifestyle, some of it is plant-based, and it's probably in and of itself probably not enough for someone to completely heal their migraines. But just some leverage points, you know, put carrots in your purse. And it's just a 9-page ebook, but take a peek if you're interested.
No,
and I just want to throw it out there that, like, you know, I came into this whole thing with the assumption that, like, there has to be a solution out there. And so I think sometimes people lose hope. They lose, you know, when they've been dealing with migraines for so long, and there absolutely is a way out of migraine hell. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we just have to have that confidence, because if we lose that, you know.
Oh, gosh, totally.
Yeah, but I think one reason people aren't seeing the solutions is because some of them are really just so simple.
Like carrots and radishes. You know, it's funny because I was on your website as you were speaking a bit, and I was like, then it all came together. You kept saying it comes back to our roots. And I was thinking, like, roots, like folk medicine. And then you were like, no, like literally like radishes, carrots, you know. And I was like, oh, they're on your website. They're so pretty. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, and they're not glorious. I mean, people think about radishes and they're like, yeah, right, lady. You know, like, it's interesting to see how people react to doing the protocol, and because there's always one step that people leave out because they just don't really buy it.
Uh-huh.
Some people are just like, they don't really buy the radish thing, even though radishes are very pungent and medicinal tasting when you try them, you know. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's interesting to see, like, the blocks that people have to healing. There's usually also at least one high histamine food that people are just too emotionally attached to let go of.
Wow.
And it's always interesting because they buy the whole concept that I'm sharing, and yet they want to have exemption for their ketchup, you know?
Right.
Like,
totally.
I don't want to slather my hash browns with ketchup every morning. And it's like,
right. You're like, well, then you might have to keep having migraines, you know? That's the deal.
Yeah,
I love how you put it, getting out of migraine hell. And I just really thank you so much for encouraging people to look into a solution and to let people know that there is one, and you are walking proof of coming out of that hell on the other side. And it's so awesome that you're here as a resource to help people. And I know you mentioned your coaching's pretty full right now, which is great. But I see you have a waiting list. So if people do want to get in touch with you, they can pop in and still get your newsletter and wait for you to be available.
That's right. Yeah.
Awesome.
Happy to help people out. It's great. I really love working with people in person too, because, you know, I can check in on them and, you know, it's not just like a one-time deal, because my initial coaching package is for two sessions. So there's an hour and a half long initial session and then a follow-up session. But in between that time, when people are implementing the protocol, I touch base with them and see how they're doing and answer questions. So it's kind of like, you know, continual support, because lifestyle change is challenging for people. And this
absolutely
requires lifestyle change. So I try to be there for people, and because it's just so gratifying to see people get their lives back and get their energy back. And imagine like how much energy would be freed up in the world if all the people with migraines like could do what they really want to do with their time instead of lying in bed their guts out.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's wonderful. Thanks so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to share with us today. And we'll make sure that people get the address. The link for your free gift is in the same daily email that came out with this recording. And you can find Maria at simplywellmigrainerelief.com. And anything else you want to add before we say farewell to our listeners?
I just want to say thank you. And, you know, it's all about the plants and the community and self-care. So thanks for spreading that message. And yeah, it's a revolution.
It is a revolution. Woohoo!
Have a great day, Shauna.